1014 My TV.
Hi, everybody. Keep playing America tonight. You know, each and every show we start inside the Beltway. So much is happening in Washington, and it's always a pleasure to welcome Ellen Ratner from Talk Radio News to this show. She adds a spark, if you will, and she's ready to become unglued with all the amendments that are being battered around in D.C., so much so that when she leaves the place and she's in a cab or in a car, she's still listening to it. Ellen, what's the scoop on bickering over, what, 400 trillion amendments? I'm exaggerating, but it's like 400.
600 amendments, apparently. Oh. I don't know if they're going to get to all 600 or whether it's 550, but it's approximately 600 amendments from everything from proprietary school rules to what's going to happen with women's funding on protective issues. I mean, everything, including allowing or trying to disallow the fact that I think in 2014, and don't get me correct on the numbers, that they're making people switch to a different kind of light bulb. And one guy gets on the floor and says, well, you know, our light bulb should be protected. When you think of an idea, you think of a light bulb. You don't think of, I mean, this is, it sounded like a Saturday Night Live skit today. One guy from Texas gets up and says, the foreigners are causing the problems in the environment. It was just something out of the movies.
All right, and I'm sure that movie's going to continue to roll. It's a long one. It's a double feature, a triple feature at least.
Right.
All right, let's move to the Patriot Act. We've been talking a lot about this. I don't think it's a surprise. It gets extended.
It got extended for 3 months. Of course, the Obama administration would like it extended for 3 years. The liberals and the Tea Party people got together to try and prevent it. They certainly did in the House the first time under a certain kind of rule. Now the majority will rule, simple majority will rule. So basically, we will see it extended, and my guess is we'll just see it in 3 month extensions because people are not necessarily going to take the heat for doing it over a long period of time.
Yeah, I agree. So we move from that to the fact that will the government shut down? I was talking to a lot of people in the audience, as you can imagine, in Connecticut, Vermont, Illinois, Texas, and Dallas and Austin. There's people on both ends of the spectrum that listen to America Tonight, those that are fresh-faced and just out of college and those who are retired, newly retired, and they're worried about Social Security checks if the government shuts down. What are the chances of the government shutting down? Handicap it for me. What do you think happens?
Well, you know something, I was around during the 95 Monica Lewinsky government shutdown, as I call it, because, of course, that is when interns were running the press office at the White House, and we all know what happened with that. So let's hope that if the government shuts down, President Obama will not be reaching into the same cookie jar, so to speak.
But, there you go.
But I have a feeling that if I am going to be a betting person, I'm going to say there's a 60 to 70% chance we're going to have a government shutdown.
Ooh.
I just don't see. Boehner today has been very clear about the fact, he did a press conference, that he is not going to approve another continuing resolution. We only have it till March 4th, unless there is some significant cuts in government spending. There also has to be whatever bill is passed with all these amendments has to go to the Senate. And as you know, a lot of that is going to be dead on arrival because the Senate is just not going to debate, and with all their arcane rules, 600 amendments. So I just don't know, and I don't see, with the House going out of session all next week for their district work period, that there is going to be much time to really negotiate, and they'll have exactly 4 days or so when they come back to deal with whatever the Senate has.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's pretty high. I don't know if I would have put it as high as you, but you're there, and I think it's going to happen. And then it's a question of how many days, how long, who knows.
And I think the White House certainly doesn't want to see happen, but, you know, there's been all this talk about adult conversations. And Boehner was asked about that today. It came up again. It has come up several times a day at the White House briefing. And I think, by the way, everybody is delighted to see that Robert Gibbs has gone. But everybody likes Jay Carney a lot better. Of course, he used to be one of us, so that's probably why.
Yes. I'll tell you someone who really likes him, although she's not covering the White House anymore, Claire Shipman.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, yes, of course they're married. All right, so let's move to the final thing. Wisconsin, on fire. It's the lots of protests in Wisconsin, not just in Madison and Green Bay at the University of Wisconsin. Green Bay, they were protesting the proposed budget cuts and student walkouts. And, man, people in Wisconsin are on fire about what's happening.
Well, yes, I think the White House feels that unions are under assault, if that's the word that was used today, and that people should have a right to free bargaining and to bargain. And, of course, the issue is not so much that there might be some cuts in terms of how much of a salary they have to put away for retirement and et cetera, because that's all negotiable. But what they're trying to do is say that you cannot negotiate certain work rules and conditions, such as how much of your retirement goes into that. That is not open for collective bargaining. Well, how do you tell an entire group of people, teachers, policemen, et cetera, that you can't do collective bargaining on your work rule? I thought that was kind of part of America.
Right, exactly. And isn't that the whole idea behind the unions, too? That's part of it, part of
signing
up.
You understand that there has to be some give. Everybody,
right.
You know, people are understanding that reality. But I think that's where things are gone. And as you know, the Democrats packed up and they went in a bus and they left the state.
Yeah, exactly. I love watching the video of that, by the way. It was very dramatic. We never know what you're...
As I understand, according to the rules, you have to have one Democrat in order to have a quorum in the state house.
Really? So just one?
That's right.
Yeah, good luck. You're going to have to dig hard. You never know what you're going to get on this show. Wisconsin education protests or talking about the new guy in town. Carney, by the way, back to that for just a quick second. No matter what, whether he's Gibbs Light or not, eventually, I think it's still a better deal for you. What do you think?
Oh, 100%. Very upset that Bill Burton left.
Yeah.
Or is leaving on Friday, because I mean, we all thought he was going to get the job. He should have gotten the job. He's a great guy. He's loved by the press. He's going to do his own consulting firm, and we had a little party for him today.
All right. Ellen Ratner, full of cake. Did you eat some cake?
I did, actually, just a little bit.
Ellen Ratner.
Martha's rum cake.
Ooh, that sounds good. I'm watching my weight now. I'm getting in shape, Ellen. I'm doing it. I'm going to run a marathon, so don't talk to me about
cake. Oh, my gosh.
We'll see. We'll see how long it takes, but I'm determined I'm going to run the New York City Marathon.
Oh, my gosh. I'll be talking to you about that.
Okay. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News. Always fun. Thank you. All right, coming up this hour of America Tonight, boy, we got a couple of other great guests for you. One, we're going to talk about coal. And do you think coal is killing the atmosphere, or do you think coal is very much a necessity? I think it's very much a necessity. And the problem is what happens in Egypt and what's happening in the Middle East, there certainly is, if you will, a destruction of coal because, I say destruction of coal, the path to coal, let's say, is littered with protests. How's that? So we're going to talk about that, too. A couple of really good interviews, like I said, coming up on a lot of different topics. Stay with us. That's next, Round the Bend.
Becoming a modern smoker is now easier and more cost-effective, thanks to LeSig. Traditional smokers the world over love LeSig. E-cigarettes with a look, feel, and taste of real cigarettes, but without the nasty smoke, ashes, or stains. LeSig is powered by revolutionary microelectronic technology. A small, rechargeable battery and unique replaceable cartridge provide all the satisfaction and benefits of smoking without the smoke and all the hazards. See the large variety of LeSig e-cigarette supplies and accessories at LeSig.com. That's L-E-C-I-G. LASIG.com. LASIG is competitively priced, comes with the best customer service, a 30-day warranty, and satisfaction guaranteed. What a great gift idea. For a 10% discount, mention GCN when you call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Ask for fast, free, same-day shipping. Order online at LASIG.com and use promo code GCN at checkout. That's LESIG.com. LASIG, for today's modern smoker.
Have you ever felt like the United States government knows way too much about your financial affairs? I continue to hear stories about property seizures, frozen bank accounts, confiscation of stocks and bonds. It makes me wonder if the U.S. citizen will ever again have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, with the Drug and Money Laundering Act, the IRS Revenue Ruling 6045 of 1984, and the Trading with the Enemy Act and Franklin D. Roosevelt's Executive Order of 1933, some precious metal holdings are subject to government intervention. For this reason, Midas Resources has prepared a report explaining the boundaries of trading precious metals privately. Whether if you have any intention of trading with Midas Resources or not, I have instructed my representatives to give this report out free. Call for your free copy at 1-800-686-2237. When investing, always proceed with caution. Again, call 1-800-686-2237. Exercise your legal right to trade metals privately. 1-800-686-2237.
Most of us eat a blend of processed, man-made, and all-natural food. But the food you eat may not provide all the nutrition your body needs. We now know that liquid vitamin supplements are absorbed faster than pills. That's why you need C-Energy from AffinityCEnergy.com. Sea vegetation is known to be the richest source of organic minerals, and that's what you'll find in all-natural, great-tasting Sea Energy. Sea Energy contains aloe vera, black cherry, cranberry, and pomegranate juices, plus ginseng, cat's claw, ginger, ginkgo biloba, and over 50 trace minerals needed for healthy metabolism, all from natural organic sea plant sources. Get a 10% discount by using promo code GCN at checkout when you order Sea Energy from AffinityCEnergy.com. Call 855-732-3637. That's 855-732-3637. Or go to AffinitySeaEnergy.com today.
Welcome back to America Tonight. Pleased to be joined by Business and Media Institute. And boy, do they have an interesting message or story to tell. One that's very familiar to many of you here in America Tonight, a lot of you listening to us in Kentucky and in the West Virginia area, talking about coal and talking about why coal is so important and why it's become attacked so much and kind of a dirty word in so many circles. But coal as an energy source has serious, serious security implications, and I'm sure Julia can fill us in on why we should pay attention to coal and trace it with Egypt and Tunisia and elsewhere in the Middle East and why we should be concerned. Julia, thanks so much for once again joining us on ATN.
Oh, thank you for having me.
All right, so you heard my statement, and it's one that you've made, with what's going on in the Middle East. Why somebody listening right now, anywhere in America, whether they're in Connecticut or Kentucky or any of those areas, why should they be saying, well, why do I care about Egypt and coal? Why should they care?
Well, I think whenever there's a disruption, political unrest in the Middle East, it would be wise for us to stop and think about our domestic energy sources. Coal is one of the most abundant energy sources we have here in the United States. It employs a good number of people in this country. It also provides more than half of our electricity. So it's a big industry. It has a powerful effect on every American's daily life. And yet it gets abused constantly by the network news media.
Yeah, and you actually did, you know, you did a lot of analysis on this. And what did you find? What did the Business and Media Institute find when you looked at how it was being covered, let's just say coal, in mainstream right. news media programs?
Yeah, I looked at all three broadcast networks for all the coal industry stories since January 1st, 2010, and I found that nearly 80% of those stories were related to tragic mining accidents. And the problem with that isn't that those things aren't newsworthy, because certainly they are, but they're the exception to the rule. This is an industry that has worked very hard to become safer, and tragedies like what we had in April of 2010 are not everyday occurrences, and they shouldn't be treated as such by the network news media, who really fail to put things into context and proper perspective for their audience.
Yeah, and coal, in this country, looking at coal and how many people actually, you know, you talk about the mining disasters, the far and few in between, and of course you don't want to see any of that, obviously we realize that, but
right.
Coal to people listening, how big is coal in our lives? I think people don't realize coal. They think of it as something, they don't understand how coal is used for energy in some cases.
Right. Well, since it provides more than half of our electricity, you should be thinking about coal when you turn on your lights or when you power up your computer or, you know, whenever you run your dishwasher or your toaster or if you have an electric stove like I do, all of those things in many cases are powered by coal. So that's what people should be thinking about before they start hating on this particular industry.
Yeah, no kidding. And of course, a lot of people in the coal industry, and you know this too, they're not saying that they don't want to get along with other alternatives, but they're saying that, wow, how did we become the target? When did that start happening? Was it because of a few of the accidents that happened, or just because, okay, environmentalists decided to zero in on coal and say it's dirty, it's not, we can't have this in the environment? Was that it, or just a combination?
Well, I think, you know, King Coal has been attacked by the left for many years. Most recently, most of those attacks come in the guise of global warming alarmist rhetoric. That's certainly what we see in the network news media, that they call it dirty and dangerous and polluting. And they rarely put it into perspective of how desperately we need it as a power source right now, because, you know, if coal is powering more than half of our electricity, that means that everything else we have, nuclear, hydroelectric, solar and wind, and anything else out there, that isn't even able at this point to make up more than half of our energy mix. We can't just immediately do away with coal. Yet the Obama administration is taking steps through the Environmental Protection Agency to limit the amount of coal that can be produced, particularly in Appalachia.
Oh, yeah. Touche. Well said. That's it. Exactly. We'd be remiss not to ask you this, Julia, since we have you here, of course, and you get all those facts and figures. You do such a great job at BMI. One of the other things that you were talking about this week is the fact that we've just gone through the second anniversary of the $787 billion stimulus package. As you can imagine, this is a hot button for many who listen to America Tonight, because we see unemployment. It's well over 8%, and some of the guarantees, of course, haven't happened. But despite all of that, and I completely agree with, I think, some of your findings, hardly anyone covers the fact that this is a smashed promise, right?
Right.
Are you seeing that in the numbers that you've been able to find?
No, you know, and I don't have those numbers in front of me, but I do, you know, I helped with this report, and it's something that we've covered ever since the stimulus was being, there were all these grand promises about what the stimulus was going to accomplish, and somehow it was going to create millions of jobs, and it was going to keep unemployment below 8%. What happened really, of course, we all know this, unemployment went as high as 10.2% nationally, and it's now at 9%. That's still way above the promise. It's clearly failed, and yet, if I remember correctly, we found that only 9 stories on the network news in the last 2 years have even mentioned that promise.
Yeah. And less than 2% of the stories even referred to the prediction in the two full years of the coverage that they actually promoted the stimulus instead of the other. And it's interesting, you did say something, in fairness, is true. You compare it to the previous president, who was forced to defend, what was it, less than, I didn't really even think about this number. I knew it was low, but less than 5% unemployment during the entire time of his presidency, right? Mm-hmm. That's accurate.
Right, absolutely. George Bush, under George W. Bush, unemployment went below 5%. That's historically low unemployment, and yet over and over again, what we saw from the network news media were attacks on him, predictions that the unemployment rate was going to jump, that it couldn't last, that a recession was just around the corner. The way that they spun unemployment under Bush was the exact opposite of the way that they spin it under Barack Obama.
Yeah, no kidding. So tell me, this would be interesting to ask you. I haven't thought of this before because we've focused on particularly, you know, the issues. But how do you do that? And I've always been fascinated by this because you have such great numbers. What do you do? And you go through the broadcasts, ABC, CBS, NBC, all of those. How do you gather a lot of this information you get at the Business and Media Institute?
Well, I'll speak specifically about my Cole study. What I did was I pulled all of the stories mentioning Cole since January 1st, 2010, from Nexus, which is a news transcribing service. Printed them all out, went through them by hand to figure out which ones were actually about the coal industry and which ones weren't, tossed the ones that weren't aside, and then went through them and looked for the trends and you know, really kept track of things as I was going through, and then found out what they were really doing wrong and counted that all up. So it's a time-consuming process, but one that we certainly believe in at the Business and Media Institute, that we really need to quantify bias so people realize how overwhelming it is and that it's not just one reporter here and there, that it really is an overall theme in the news media.
Right, so you're seeing trends. I mean, so mainstream media, you know, I'll have people come and say, oh, Kate, mainstream media, you know, you're telling us, because what we try to do on America Tonight is, hey, let's give you the pie. This is what we know, and here's the facts and whatever. And I'll have a lot of people that call up and say, mainstream media, are you watching? Are you watching what's going on? So do you think it's partly because, and of course this is just opinion, but do you think it's partly because of the corporations, so many of the corporations taking over a lot of these networks, ABC or CBS or whatever, and it's just kind of an underlying theme?
I don't know that it has so much to do with that, but that there is a pack mentality among journalists. There is also the limitations of broadcast media. They tend to go with whatever is most exciting, and they tend not to break things and really explain them, which is something that the print media pretty much always does a little bit better than the broadcast, although they'll still be very liberal tilted. But they, you know, a newspaper has more space to explain what's wrong, and broadcast journalists will rarely not get into all of the details that they should to clarify things for their audience.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's the soundbite and the lack of time, and, of course, it's shrinking as well, too. Julia Seymour, thanks so much from the Business and Media Institute. As always, we appreciate you stopping by here on America Tonight.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 5 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $209, and the Berkey guy will include three Sport Berkey water bottles and ship everything to you free of charge. That's right, three Sport Berkey water bottles and free shipping, an $87 value, yours free. Call the Berkey guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at goberkey.com. That's goberkey.com today.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
The food storage industry leader has done it again.
Introducing FDG Clubs and Survival Bucks from the Freeze Dry Guy. For over 39 years, the Freeze Dry Guy has served various government agencies and the private sector with the finest in storable foods and emergency rations. If you've wanted to build emergency food supplies but couldn't afford it,
now you can.
Go to freezedryguy.com, click on products, and look for the Freeze Dry Guy Clubs to pay as you go.
Now you can build food storage without going into debt.
Choose from a payment range of $95 to $450 per month.
Our clubs work with everyone's budget.
Plus, when you join Freeze Dry Guy Clubs, you'll get additional rewards. For example, this month, get 10% back in survival bucks on all purchases in the Freeze Dry Guy product line, plus free shipping within the lower 48 states on any order amount. Hurry. Go to freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. The Freeze Dry Guy. The best you can buy.
Never buy home canning jar lids again. No kidding. When you buy Tadler reusable canning lids once, you'll never buy canning lids ever again. Safely store emergency preparedness foods for years. Traditional metal lids are single-use throwaways containing BPA. But Tadler reusable canning lids are guaranteed to last a lifetime when used as designed for home canning. Tadler lids are made with a USDA and FDA-approved food-grade plastic, safe for direct food contact, and contain no BPA. Tadler lids are dishwasher safe, usable with standard pressure or water bath canning, eliminate food spoilage from acid corrosion, fit standard mason jars, are indefinitely reusable, and are proudly made in the USA. Place orders at reusablecanninglids.com or call 1-877-747-2793. 877-747-2793. Call 877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's reusablecanninglids.com for Tadler reusable canning lids, the original since 1976.
Hi, I'm Don Wiskin, and have you ever wondered what the garlic cayenne drops could do for you? February is Heart Month, and we want you to find out just what can happen when you take the right combination of herbs designed to maintain our cardiovascular health. Purchase a 4-month supply of Extendivite drops or capsules, plus get a bonus month supply of capsules for only $125 plus shipping. That's 5 months worth of Extendivite for $25 per month. This is a Heart Month special to help get you started on your path to better health and ends February 28th. So don't be left out. Find out what Extendivite can do for you. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Be joined by our next guest, who's in our virtual green room right now. He's probably got expensive taste, so he's putting down that $10 latte. No, I'm just kidding. So anyway, let me give you a little background on David Mora. He advised 5 Nobel Prize winners. Check it out, 12 winning global presidential campaigns, all that. He's worked with so many of the top dogs, top business leaders in the U.S. and the world, really. He's developed 10 strategies for Democrats for 2012. David Morey is the vice president of a core strategy group and founder and CEO of DMG. He can talk about a whole lot of things, and we're going to talk about the Middle East. David, thanks for coming on with us. We know you're busy.
Kate, good to be with you.
Let's talk about Egypt first. Your reaction initially when everything exploded in Cairo and Alexandria and the square and whatnot, and then the 18 days that ensued, what were you thinking when Mubarak eventually left?
Well, it is a new world in terms of the information revolution. We say it every year, but then that revolution takes us to yet another level of complexity, volatility, change, really. I mean, all of us, all of your listeners have to deal with the kind of change driven by this information revolution. We all got to watch it on television this time. It was a remarkable thing to see. I think very, very interesting, You know, two quick points. One, we don't know how it's going to turn out, so we've got to be a little careful here. And two, the U.S. didn't play that central a role. I mean, Twitter and Facebook were almost as important as U.S. foreign policy, or in some ways were part of U.S. foreign policy here.
Do you think it was good that the U.S. didn't play much of a role? Was that the right way to play it for President Obama?
I think that's correct. I mean, I think, you know, just with a little bit of maybe too many voices speaking at one time, it was, in my judgment, well handled. Again, we don't know how this is all going to play out. And most revolutions don't end up happy. You know, I mean, I was in the middle of the Philippine Revolution in 1986. You know, people got pissed afterwards. You know, the Russian Revolution, the French Revolution. There's lots of examples of the expectations not being met after a revolution takes place. So they've got a lot of hard work ahead.
Yeah, no kidding. So I know that you've developed 5 signposts for recalibration. And when I say recalibration, in talking about Iran, what's happening in Iran, Middle East countries in general, not just Egypt, for the mode of where we're moving, you call it, what do you call it, molecules in motion.
It's the kind of change we're all seeing today. We're seeing it in business, the businesses we work with, the CEOs we work with. We're seeing it as we dealt and worked in foreign policy. Yeah, I think, Kate, it's a chance to reboot American foreign policy. In my judgment, to pivot off this Egyptian, just this remarkable change, and I think a successful management of this crisis, potential crisis by the administration. The administration's foreign policy, it seems to me, has to become more strategic. We've got to step back and be more proactive. We all know with the budget situation that we're all listening to and watching today, we have to do more with less. Therefore, U.S. foreign policy has to become more smart. We have to do more with less in government. We have to do more in smarter ways in terms of U.S. foreign policy. We've got to reboot and step back and build a strategy for where we're going and America's role in the world.
Yeah, so what do you so let's say that you have a role in this strategy wise. What are the first things you say have to happen?
Well, I think, you know, President Obama has to a large extent followed the foreign policy of George Herbert Walker Bush. I mean, you know, it's been to some extent a pretty centrist foreign policy. There's not a lot of difference in the Obama administration foreign policy versus his predecessor's foreign policy, George W. Bush. And I continue. They've got to rise above partisan politics. Neither, you know, the Wilsonian approach to the world, the neoconservative approach to the world, neither of them makes a lot of sense, nor does maintaining some kind of autocratic status quo. You've got to find a way in that center to rise above politics. We've got to do this, by the way, domestically, and find that strategic center. We've got to ratify, for example, the South Korea, Panama-Colombia trade deals. We should be normalizing Cuba relations, continuing to outreach with Russia. Thankfully, the START agreement was ratified during that lame duck session, rather productive. Number two, we've got to figure out how to help push democratization around the world without getting too much out there in front of it. If we do it too quickly or we brand it as American, then it may backfire. You know, these movements, we see it in Egypt, they have to happen indigenously. They have to happen within the countries themselves. That's why organizations like NDI and IRI, the National Democratic Institute and the International Republican Institute, excuse me, are so critical, you know, because they push out the Karzais, the Assads, the Salis, you know, the people that we're seeing governing Yemen and Egypt and, you know, all kinds of countries around the world in the Middle East that we got to be worried about. And thirdly, we need to create a youth policy. An outreach to youth. 30% of the region is made up by youth. 25% of them are unemployed. You know, so if we don't begin to look at the world through the lens of the next generation and outreach effectively to that next generation with educational exchanges, for example, we're going to be in big trouble.
Yeah, well said. And you see, you mentioned Yemen, of course, is one of them. But in looking now, we're starting to see as those protests are across the Middle East, and what's happened in Egypt now has spread. And then, of course, Iran, we saw what happened before the elections, and then we're back to the same thing. And then there's cries to execute some of the people who oppose Ahmadinejad, but I suppose that's nothing new for that regime. How, when we mix this all up, like you say, being very careful, I mean, this is a really tenuous situation in the Middle East, isn't it?
It is. But, you know, we've been going nowhere in the peace process, so maybe the molecules in motion, as you just said, gives us some new opportunities. You know, maybe it focuses Israel on putting the right kind of deal together. And maybe Netanyahu can become Nixon and go to China. You know, maybe that's the man who can finally get some more stability to that region that's not seen much stability. You know, I think we have to continue to be outreaching. George Mitchell's the best in the business at this. He must be getting tired by now. He's been on this for 2.5 years, and it seems like we've, you know, progressed like 1/16 of an inch, you know, and then it all gets jumbled up after that. But, look, I think change is opportunity. I say this to people in business. I say this to the top CEOs in the country we get to work with. I say this to candidates we work on campaigns with. Change is opportunity. You know, we preach this insurgent approach. The Underdog Advantage is my book. And, you know, the insurgent approach, the underdog approach just loves change. The insurgents, the underdogs love change because they figure change will work for them. So I'm a little bit optimistic about some changes in the Middle East that may be bringing some more peace to that region.
Yeah. We'd be remiss not to ask you about this because I mentioned it, too, at the top, the people that you advise, and that you've come up with 10 strategies for Democrats for 2012. Can you share some of those with us? What's the strategy?
Yeah, I mean, I think the president – I worked on the campaign. We did 12 winning presidential campaigns, and working with candidate Barack Obama was one of them in 2008. I've not worked for the White House or with the White House since. And I think he's I think they've done a remarkable job after the lame duck, after the midterm loss during the lame duck session. He's learned as much or more as Bill Clinton in 94, as Ronald Reagan in 82. Both suffered tremendous midterm losses in their first terms. And he's really grown as an executive. But my quick ones are, one, get into that insurgent position. The Obama campaign, forget who you voted for, ran this remarkable insurgent campaign. I define that as playing offense, leaning forward, controlling the dialogue, you know, taking some chances, being bold. And for the first 2 years, they weren't running an insurgent strategy. They weren't, number two, owning that word change that won them the election. Hillary Clinton would have been president if she could have gotten a hold of that word change. Instead, she fought that primary battle against Obama on the word experience. And number three, define the future. I think the president began to do that in the State of the Union address. He's got to continue to do it. Winning the future is his phrase. It's got to become meaningful like Reagan did. You know, I wasn't as big a fan of Reagan as I am now. I was working on some of the other side often for Senator John Glenn, for example, on the Hill. And, you know, he was good at defining the future. He was also very good at rising above politics, finding some wisdom in that strategic center. That's what has to happen on this budget debate. That's what absolutely, you know, this is why Chris Christie and Andrew Cuomo, you know, are in these very, very high levels of approval now. You know, people that tell the truth right now as leaders and rise above politics and find some progress in some kind of sensible place in the center where all the action really is. It's not all the way on the right or all the way on the left on cable TV channels, respectively. It's in the center. That's where it really happens. Look at how Reagan really governed. Look at what Clinton did when he recovered from those midterm losses. And I think the administration's done a great job on communications lately. You know, I was arguing a few weeks ago they had to continue to do that. Again, like Ronald Reagan, simplify and focus your message. Nobody has time to remember. What did the administration stand for in the first 2 years? Can anybody give me a theme, a message?
Right.
I think it was healthcare, wasn't it? I'm not sure. It was about 8,000 things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are some quick ones, Kate, but I think they're beginning to do it. The Tucson speech was a remarkable speech. Guess who wrote that speech? The guy that wrote the last remarkable speech, the speech on race in Philadelphia, President Barack Obama. I mean, you know, when was the last time we had a president who could write speeches like that, let alone deliver them?
Yeah.
The new staff, Daley, and, you know, I mean, you just start to see a new tone, and I'm just hoping they start leading on this budget issue, that they start following advice piece number one, control the dialogue. Be bold, play offense, be an insurgent.
Yeah, it was so well said. Absolutely. I love that. Be an insurgent. And change is opportunity. Anybody listening to us can take that and run with it, I think, in whatever you do. David Morey, thanks so much for joining us on America Tonight. And you mentioned it. Your book is The Underdog Advantage. Pick it up. Thanks, David. Tonight, we have Fair or Foul. On the heels of that conversation with David. And that includes, are you collecting light bulbs because you're worried you're not going to be able to use them anymore? I was thinking about it today, looking around my place. I might have to start collecting some of those light bulbs. What do I mean? And is it a fair or foul? Also, in Portland, just say no to perfume. They're banning scents. How do you do that? We'll talk about it next.
It's the winter cold and flu supplement sale at HerbalHealer.com. Take advantage of Herbal Healer Academy's incredible savings on the best cold and flu supplements available. Many of you know elderberry is exceptional against viral infections. Right now, Herbal Healer Academy has elderberry power, regularly priced at $16.95, now incredibly low, at only $10 for 60 vegetarian caps. For children and seniors, our Herbal Healer Academy Flu Away Elderberry Liquid is only $13 for a 4-ounce bottle. Also on super sale, olive leaf capsules, oregano oil plus capsules, and our incredible respirate formula, Oregacillin Physician Strength Capsules for your lungs. Normally $34.95, now just $25. Hit the winter specials link at HerbalHealer.com for these cold and flu supplement specials and other on-sale products like apple cider vinegar, brain power, and neuro recovery. New customers get a free catalog with your first order. Log on and hit the winter specials now at HerbalHealer.com.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
This special announcement is brought to you by Renaissance Charge.
Have you ever wondered if you could make your car run on 100% electric power for free? It is now possible. How about a simple device that is both a super efficient motor and a free energy generator at the same time? What if this could also be used to restore useless batteries and save you lots of money? Because our customers asked for it, we have organized a Renaissance Charge Conference workshop on July 29th to July 31st at the beautiful Coeur d'Alene Resort in Idaho. Not only will you see these fascinating energizers, but you will be able to build some alongside genius inventor John Bedini. Participate in this truly historic event featuring our cutting-edge alternative energy, Tesla technology. Register early for the best seats and advanced workshop by visiting rcharge.com. That's r-charge.com for details. Or call 208-772-4514. That's 208-772-4514.
Get past the people, get past the shit, man.
Alright, smells and light bulbs, part of fair or foul. You can throw in your 2 cents if you want to on this. I'm going to throw out the digits just right here at the top. If you want to do that, 800-259-5791, 800-259-5791. Okay, check it out. I think all of you know this by now. And Alex Jones's website, prisonplanet.com, actually did a big blowout thing on this. And people have been talking about it. And the fact that there was a bill signed a few years ago, I want to say it was 4 years ago, by then President George W. Bush, that would mandate that manufacturers can't produce the 100-watt bulb after January 1st, 2012. Okay, notice the date, 2012, followed by so on and so forth, years later, all the other ones, 75-watt, you know, you run to Home Depot, Lowe's, wherever you go, I don't know, Walmart, and you just pick them up for your for your reading room, for wherever you are, for your living room. 75 water, 60, 40. Probably at my place I got a lot of 75 to 60. So 75, done. Forget it. If everything were to stay in place, you wouldn't get it after January 2013. 60 and 40, January 2014. I think a lot of people may have kind of missed this. When it first happened, there were complaints. But now you start to look into it a little bit deeper as to what kind of a replacement player you're going to get. And the replacement player is not so good. And you can find plenty of scientists to probably verify this, I think. And this is something that happened in Europe where incandescent bulbs started to be thrown out in 2009. So, or to, you know, 2009, not 2009, 2009. So the European Union was also going to ban halogen bulbs by 2016. I'm just thinking of the backyard where people light it up or they're out on a trip somewhere camping. And so instead you have to use other things. You have to use the fluorescent lamps, those compact fluorescent lamps. And they're not great. You want to talk about we'll all go blind? You cannot see. You just can't. You can't see with those lights, in my opinion. Listen, I tried it once. I couldn't see anything. Forget, you know, there's other aspects of this where people are reporting that they felt dizzy and using them and all that other sort of stuff. The fact that we're being forced into buying the cheaper CFL bulbs because of energy costs, it shows you and piggybacks off of something we talked about here a couple of segments ago, the coal industry, that there's a pounding to get rid of coal. But as you heard when we were talking to Julia Seymour, we need the coal. I mean, regardless, half of our energy, the electricity, it is coming from the coal. So forget about it. And this was one of the amendments that was brought up, the thing about the light bulbs. Yeah. It's something that could go fly under your radar. But the idea of banning the light bulb is ridiculous, because why should you just have the choice? Okay, if you want to use the other ones where I can't see, if you want to use them and you think you're doing something good for the environment and you're using less energy, great. But why shouldn't you be able to have the choice? I don't get it. So there has been a push to repeal the ban, and that's part of what one of those 600 amendments. That was one of those 600 amendments. And let's hope that happens, because it's ridiculous. So I'm going to say foul on that. I think if you want to do it, if you want to use it, look, we tried in a couple places. I couldn't see anything. So that was the first thing I had problems seeing. I didn't know what I was reading. I could not see. But then there was the added deal of, in our case, they were out like that. They're supposed to last long, but ours did not last long. And there was just a couple that we tried, we experimented with. So immediately we went back to the 75 water. In fact, I ran to Home Depot. So I call foul on the ban, because it's forced and it shouldn't be forced. It's not going to work. It's not going to work for a lot of us, okay? You might look at it a little bit differently. You know the numbers to jingle, 800-259-5791, or shoot me an email at americatonight.net. Here's the other thing. This is a kind of a crazy deal, but it would, I can't stand, have you ever been near a woman? I guess it's usually a woman. It could be a guy who puts on too much cologne because he thinks he's going to get lucky after work and when he goes to happy hour or whatever, thinks after he came out of the gym this will cover up any odor. I don't know, but usually it would probably go to or would refer to women. In Portland, the city leaders there agreed to pass a new policy discouraging what they called personal scented products in the workplace, because it could irritate some of the people in those environments, like with their asthma or allergies. Now, I understand that, but again, creepy. I don't think you should be able to do that. So the commissioner said just a day ago that they would adopt the policy that discourages perfume, aftershave, cologne, strongly scented powder deodorants, and other personal hygiene products. And they've been talking with the city over this. They've been talking about this for years, apparently. And I get it if you have... I get it. If you have a serious allergy, and there are people that have them, but I don't think you can just put that a blanket statement out there. And then of course it gets down to the thing where, well, we get annoyed if we get annoyed if someone has too much perfume on, and I get that, but you can't say to your coworker, you're dousing yourself. Come on, So now they have a city policy. So Portland wasted time debating this, looking into it. And here's the other part of this. So I work for the city, wherever I'm working, and there's this policy. I'm in marketing or whatever. And there's this policy in place. Well, is it just for the cubes? Or is it just when I'm in my office? Is it just when I'm on city business? What, you know, how far does it extend? Because where's an employee... You know, where they're exposed to that, what happens when they're moving around different places? See what I'm saying? It seems odd. Like if they ban perfume from the cube farm or something. It's micromanaging. It's ridiculous. If someone's bothering you that has a strong-smelling perfume, tell them. And if you can't, send me a note, and I'll call them and I'll tell them for you. I'm serious about that. You're being wimpy if you can't do it. So they're going to vote on this thing next week. They're going to vote on it. I think it's ridiculous. I'm sorry. It's people's personal business. And I understand asthmatics and people who have problems with that. I think you can tell people at the office. If I had that problem, and especially if I had a decent working relationship with someone, that's what I would say. This is ridiculous. I mean, here we go again with the First Amendment. We're going to tear it, shred it, pull it in all kinds of crazy directions to make it fit whatever we feel like is necessary. Which means probably someone who is highly asthmatic is higher up in the city or had the ear of somebody in the city, and that's why this became a big deal. And I think it should just be dealt with in a one-on-one situation. It really. These are great fair or fouls, right? The light bulbs, taking the light bulbs away from us in Portland, taking the right to wear deodorant that smells like spring flowers. And you think about that. When you go shopping for deodorant, guys, women, next time, look up and down the aisles and see. And there are some that are unscented, but boy, I think most of them have some kind of a scent. I think you could have all kinds of problems. If Portland approves the anti-scent policy, which it looks like they're going to do, good luck trying to enforce that. That's all I'm going to say. Good luck. They'll have a smell czar. What are you going to do there?